Welcome to Day Zero Update for May 5th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Rivick.
And yeah, it's Cinco de Mayo, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
One of those weird holidays that Americans use to drink a lot, even though the thing they're celebrating is not all that noteworthy to the people that it's for.
Yeah, pretty much.
I've seen a number of interviews with people in Mexico that are like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
We don't celebrate it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one of those holidays, but we're here to celebrate games, because there's been a lot of games, a lot of bad news this week.
Mm-hmm.
Three developers effectively are shutting down.
Yep.
We got one company writing off a whole shitload of money.
Yep.
And then the latest PC gaming controversy of the week.
Oh, yeah.
For that, as well as some positive news. One game that I think people would have been safe to assume would never appear, appeared.
Mm-hmm.
Be out pretty soon for that. And we got that ID at Xbox showcase that had some things to talk about.
Yep.
Not really too much, but some things. So we'll get to that stuff. Before we do that, let's talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here with another Crab's Treasure. Mm-hmm. I'm putting a good bit of time into this. I am like 7 or 8 hours into it now. As I have gotten out of the initial area you start in, which I forget what that was called, Slacktide, I think.
Mm-hmm.
To which you get a special mission from the Duchess to go find some people. And as you finish that up, beat the boss and come back,
mm-hmm.
You find out some weird stuff's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like it turns into a Souls kind of area where it's a lot more dark and dingy and cloudy, and everybody has lost their mind and are now just attacking, mm-hmm. you know, anybody that comes by, though, that anybody is always you,
mm-hmm.
Your character. So beat the Duchess there, killed her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the hunt for my shell still,
mm-hmm.
as I have run into the person or the weird shark thing that has it, and have gone into a new city that has a bunch of stuff you can do. It's where you can finally make use of some of the things you've continued to collect that tell you like, oh, you can sell this for X amount of microplastics, your soul's equivalent, mm-hmm. here, for using to upgrade various parts of the stuff you have. Mm-hmm. Like, I've upgraded the, I forget what they're called, stowaways, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the little assist things you get that can give you stat bumps and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
For that. But yeah, you get the ability to do your skill tree upgrades, but you go meet a moon snail, which is a weird whole thing. That character essentially narrates everything that you do.
Mm-hmm.
At least when you're around it. So when you pick out skills to unlock on your skill tree, it's like narrating what benefit that is, but from like your perspective, which you do get some points where you break it out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's pretty neat for what it is. What else have I gotten? I found a blacksmith, because that's what you got to have in a Souls-like game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have no blacksmith.
Mm-hmm.
So that requires a very specific thing that I've only gotten one of, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I've upgraded my, I think it's a crab fork, a little two-prong thing. I've upgraded that once. Have not had a chance to upgrade it again, but still working on that. I'm working, so where I'm at now, a treasure hunt has been introduced, because essentially, this area celebrates this thing called Treasure or Trash Day,
mm-hmm.
which is where, say, the giant trash island that's in the middle of the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that thing flies over or floats over at this time of the year, I guess. I don't know. Drops a bunch of trash all over the place and everybody goes nuts over it, and drops a cereal box. It has like a, you know, one of those mazes on the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
So your character, all the characters are like, oh, this the crab king, Cap'n Crab, whatever, has the tell us where the treasure is, and you're on the hunt for that, because that's somebody will trade the treasure for your shell. Otherwise, it's in the shop for like 999,999,999 microplastics, which makes you wonder if somebody went to the trouble of getting that much, if they could actually buy it off of them.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you might be able to. It's just that'd be very tedious unless you played on PC and used cheat engine to give yourself that much. But yeah, it's still very good. Still a lot of fun with its cheeky humor that gets cut off with the soulsness of it. We run into a lot of weird creatures. I think I've beaten three or four bosses since the initial one you beat. I beat the side boss in that area of Slacktide. I've gone to the open ocean, which has a whole weird mechanic where they're like, oh yeah, there's this weird dangerous creature that lurks around here, and people have, other sea creatures have laid down scent for a safe passage, so you kind of follow that a little bit. If you veer off of it, you see the boss just start spawning and chasing after you, so you have to kind of keep running back to the little like sea floaters that boats have. A lot of these things are kind of stuck on the ground as like markers to tell you how far you're going, that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's a whole fun little thing. And then now in like the forest area, which is the first part of this treasure hunt, that I've beaten one boss that was weird. That was kind of, I don't know how to describe it. He kind of had the ability to suck you in, but also jump around and spew a bunch of poison around him. Which, yeah, if you like your Souls games, you know there's going to be poison areas. So that's a whole fun thing. I've run into some rivers I've had to deal with that are just full of poison. So I'm trying to get out of those as quick as possible as I can. But yeah, I have unlocked a bunch of good mechanics to this. I have the ability to essentially do a stab with my weapon and on a shell, and you can turn that into essentially a hammer. And based on whether it's like a light or medium or heavy shell, that affects the speed with which your attack can do damage. So you're going to have to pay attention with that, but you get to do extra damage with that. So that's a very nice change of pace on the combat system. So yeah, kind of enjoying how it kind of keeps adding new things and new areas and all this. There's still like one thing I haven't unlocked yet. There's this one thing they use to block off paths and such that I'm like wanting to see how that's going to be introduced to me. I assume it's going to be weird because it stands out amongst everything else in there. But yeah. Still liking that game a lot. Definitely recommend checking it out if you like Souls games. Maybe even if you have been intrigued by Souls games but find them too hard. This game has a bunch of accessibility stuff to tweak damage and all that, and turn off the losing of your currencies when you die. That kind of stuff. And also they have, I think it does one-hit kills. It just gives your crab a gun. And not like a crab-sized gun, but like a real-sized gun. This is a giant, ridiculous thing that one-hit kills enemies. I've not tried it yet, but it is one of the achievements, is to kill an enemy with a gun. So there's that. Facing a lot of bow enemies that I'm wishing I had a bow. I could get a bow at some point, but I'm assuming I won't, because that would not really work with the way the mechanics. So, but yeah, that's another crab's treasure that's on everything, at the very least. Still a bit buggy and kind of rough around the edges, as I had one or two areas where I got stuck in a wall. That kind of stuff. Or one enemy kind of flew off into the distance and knocked me off of a place that really shouldn't have. A lot of weird stuff like that. But otherwise, not really too much. And they're working on updates too. Fix all the bugs that people are reporting to them, so they're working on that stuff. But yeah, speaking of bugs, Fallout 4 is the other game I've been playing. the new upgraded version. Mm-hmm. That is a pretty solid upgrade for what it is. Makes the game run better, look better a little bit, and load a lot faster on the consoles. Mm-hmm. My PC version doesn't load very quickly, but I think that's because it's my PC is not that fast on it. I'm not sure if I have it installed on the on the C drive, my SSD. Mm-hmm. Even then, that might not. It looks like it's not. So that might be partly why the load times are pretty slow there. But otherwise, it's Fallout 4. It hasn't really changed too much. It's still a pretty buggy game. Mm-hmm. As I got killed once by a car that just decided it did not want to stay where it was. Mm-hmm. It looked like it might have exploded, but I didn't see anything that would have caused that. Mm-hmm. It just suddenly, from its resting place, decided it did not want to rest there anymore as I was walking by. Mm-hmm. And so that was like a whole weird thing. Luckily, I didn't save too much before that, so I wasn't losing too much progress. But yeah, there's a lot of visual bugs as I've gone around in areas and seen textures of, you know, having issues and parts of the game, parts of the map kind of disappearing and all that. And looking sometimes when you can look between parts of a fence or whatever into the distance or inside of areas, it kind of looks real weird while the game draws in what it's supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Struggles with that sometimes. There's a lot of that kind of stuff that it has issues with. Maybe that's what it needs to do to run better. That's fine with me. None of that affects gameplay or anything. Mm. But yeah, the game's fine at this point. It's fine. It's not an amazing game or anything.
Mm.
I do kind of wish they would have done some work on it, adding more accessibility stuff, things that are probably available in mods on the PC version, but things that I think should just be a part of the base game, like ways to make inventory management easier, have it automatically pick up items for you around you instead of having to hunt and peck for things, that kind of stuff, especially for things that you have marked to highlight for you to get back for your crafting stuff. That, you know, would definitely be a very useful thing. Things that a lot of modern games do. You know, your Horizons and all that, your Diablos, or you can tell it that you want, you know, it's only pick up, you know, items of certain, you know, rarities and all that. But a lot of stuff would have been nice to have in Fallout 4 on the base game, but that's not probably too feasible for them. Starfield would be the place where that might be more feasible, but at this point, it seems like that's probably not a focus for them. It seems like they're focusing, especially they announced recently that they're getting ready to add 60 FPS options finally on console for that.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that they said wasn't going to be possible is finally possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to jump back into that at some point whenever that update's out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Fallout 4, perfectly fine as a free thing, free upgrade. So there's that. And that's been pretty much all I've been doing. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
As for gaming, I am still playing Helldivers 2. And yeah, I know we're going to be talking a little bit about that because of some issues that have come up over this last week. But like, as far as like the actual game is concerned, there's basically this major order that basically all the Helldivers are trying to do, where there's this one part of the Terminid front that has basically become a more or less a super colony. Basically, one of the things that comes up when you're in the Terminid part of the game up until recently was that the Super Earth had been trying to put these enormous machines that shoot out termicide, you know, basically a pesticide to kill Terminids en masse and stop them from breeding. But unfortunately, in this one particular portion of Terminid space, that the exact opposite has happened. They are actually breeding like crazy, but on top of that, the termicide has actually caused them to mutate. So now, you have to go to this particular issue where you have to shut off the termicide machines, which is a lot more difficult than it sounds because they're basically operated and controlled by these three different power stations that are spread around it. And trying to find these is not as easy as you would think it is, because these power areas are surprisingly large compared to what you would think that an area like that would be. On top of that, the supercon, because these things have grown as fast as they have and multiplied as fast, they have basically left these enormous rifts in the ground, where it's very easy to fall into like a regular hole and basically get chewed up if you're not careful. And on top of that, because these things are constantly still pumping out the termicide, everything, the whole planet is like covered in like this smoggy fog. So it can actually be very difficult to see, especially when night falls, because you've basically got no kind of like starlight or anything to help you see. But apparently we're almost done with that part. At least last time I checked last night, that might have changed. But other than that, I'm also playing Fear and Hunger Termina, which of course is the sequel to Fear and Hunger. I'm getting back to playing that, mostly because I'm playing a different character this time. And if you play like different characters, there are different parts of the story that you'll end up learning, because all these characters sort of encounter each other at different times and places where you can or recruit different individuals into your party. And the one that I have taken up to playing is an occultist. And part of what she can do is she can take up a certain rune that she can use when she comes across various ritual circles that you'll find throughout the game. And she can draw the rune for the God of Fear and Hunger, which was born in the first game. And that will actually give you a new save site and a place where you can fast travel if you need to, which is definitely a good help, because this game is surprisingly large, and because it takes place in a city rather than the dungeon like in the first game, there is a lot of places you need to go to. And also, just like in the first game, it is surprisingly easy to get yourself mutilated and murdered if you're not careful. So that's what I have been playing. Danreb, what about you?
After we're done here, I'm going to finish up Sand. But yeah, it's a solid game. I don't think I'd recommend it at full price. Definitely, like, pretty good for what, you know, Bandai Namco. So, you know, just to go ahead and go over it again. Sandland, the game Sandland was announced last year during Summer Games Fest. And then, you know, it had this whole run of marketing where they announced a movie. And then shortly after the movie came out, they announced an anime. And anyway, the plot about Sandland is about, they're in a sandy land, and basically it's post-apocalyptic, and all the water is gone. And the main characters in this story are Beelzebub, who's the demon prince, the thief, who's a friend of Beelzebub, also a demon. And then there's Rao, who you find out later has like an awesome backstory behind him. Like, he was a general for the Sandland Royal Army, and something he did in the past pretty much resulted in what happened to Sandland. So he's a bit of an older dude, and you know, with Toriyama's anime or manga style, it's kind of weird because every single character in this series looks pretty menacing, you know. There is, like, even when people smile, they all look evil. So it's like, if you don't know what's happening in the story, you know, you could really be caught off guard by characters being good, being bad, and whatever it may be. So this kind of, like, carries into the game. And the game basically covers the entire story. The movie that I talked about earlier, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but, like, at the end, they eventually, like, return peace to Sandland by finding water. I'm not going to talk about how they did it or like what they do to get there, because that's part of the journey. But like, that was what the movie is about. The anime retells that story in about 6 episodes and then goes off into its own into another arc. And the game pretty much does the same thing there, and it does it fairly differently. The game is actually like much longer. I think it's around 20 hours, whereas the anime itself is going to be around 15 episodes, which, you know, maybe what you can finish that in maybe a day if you wanted to. But yeah, so just about the game in general, it's an action RPG. It's open world. And because, like, you know, the world is Sandland, I don't really have much to say about the game's environment. Like, you're walking around deserts. So if you're somebody who was bored by Dune, it's very possible that you can be bored by Sandland. But the cool thing about it is you actually have the opportunity to visit another world or another place within that world, and it's full of greenery. And, you know, the story there is pretty cool as well. And my main thing is, like, it doesn't know whether this is really supposed to be something geared towards kids or if it's just something that's, like, you know, randomly fun. The main character, the Beelzebub, is, I think he's supposed to be endearing, but, like, he's an asshole. And, like, when you have an asshole main character, it's really hard to, like, follow or cheer for what's happening there. But what the game does is interesting is the fact that, you know, it's a checklist open world RPG. So with that, you're going to have a lot of side quests. And the side quests, they don't so much build the world, but they really do a good job of telling the story of a whole bunch of characters in it. The problem with that is that the characters we're learning about have no importance in the greater mythos of the actual story at all. Like, so, you know, I just talked about the main characters. I didn't talk about Anne, or I didn't talk about, like, the king of Sandland, who he's a bad dude in his own right, but at the same time, he's stupid. It's a Toriyama anime. They're really geared for kids. But the main thing is that, well, when you do these side quests, you hear about these things like kids dying and all that, and I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty dark. And it's just interesting seeing as how, you know, you play a game like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and you're going to have side quests that really build between your character camaraderie. But with Sandland, it doesn't do that. It definitely feels like filler. And it's interesting because, you know, the anime itself is like 14 episodes, so there's not a whole lot of filler. It's straight to the point. It's a lot like the way Dragon Ball Z Kai was. And yeah, that's definitely a reason to enjoy it. But yeah, then as for the battle system, it's action-based, but it's also really easy. When you use just a character, it's typical run into somebody, press square, and then, you know, combine some circle in there to just pull off combos and kill people. And you also have the option to use all sorts of vehicles that they call bots. So you have a tank, which, you know, can shoot cannons and bullets. You also get access to a motorcycle. You get access to a humanized mech. And all of these are pretty cool ways to fight everything. But at the same time, it's also really easy. There was only one point in the game where I felt like I sucked at it. And the main reason why that happened was because I didn't realize that I had a whole lot of upgradable stuff that I got as a result of looting everything. So when I found out that I could upgrade my tank, I eventually became overpowered. And yeah, like the game is easy in that regard. And then the side quests are all pretty mundane. You just go from point A to point B. Sometimes it'll have you kill something, and, you know, you do a bounty quest or whatever it may be. And the reason why you want to do these side quests is because it builds this little town called Spino from a town with nobody in it to all of a sudden a town with, like, a whole bunch of people in it, to not really make a kingdom, but to just build a nice thriving town that people actually want to go to. So it's very reminiscent of something like Ni no Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom, or even, you know, the old Suikoden games, where they're building the kingdom. Pretty cool in that regard. And it's nice just seeing, you know, having the town built from the ground up. And that's pretty cool to see. But yeah, the game is fairly short for what an RPG is. I'm around 20 hours in, and like I said, I'm going to beat it today. The platinum is fairly easy as well, but it's also grindy in the sense where you have to do a whole bunch of side quests. You have to be able to level up your entire chart and things like that. So yeah, on the Smash Pad scale, I would definitely give this game a 3. I'm reviewing this game for another site, so it's not going to be up on Smash Pad. But yeah, this is me going into depth with Sandland. It's a solid game, but I would recommend it at $30 and under. I wouldn't recommend it at $60. And that's about it.
All right.
All right. Let's get to some news. And we got some news for your subscription services. It is a new month, so PlayStation Plus Essential has some new games for you. And has some good ones here. Let's see. First up, for PS5 and PS4, there is EA Sports FC 24 Standard Edition. The latest of the, you know, football games, the soccer games that EA has made, as they get people into that before the next year's game comes out. So that's probably a smart move on their part. Let's see. For the PS5, there's Ghost Runner 2, which is, one of those kind of first-person action kind of speedrun kind of games where you're kind of running through these areas trying to get through efficiently, take the least amount of time as you can. But it's also got some story stuff to it. And, they've added more non-linear levels to this with motorbike sections and such. So they've added a little more variety to this one. But that seems cool. And probably the best of the bunch here is Tunic for PS5 and PS4. As that is just a fantastic little indie game that kind of merges elements of both Dark Souls games and Legend of Zelda. With a lot of the style being very Zelda-ish. As well as your basic sword and shield kind of combat style to it, though you have a lot of Soulsian mechanics of, you know, collecting currency that when you die, you have to go back and get it, I believe. But it does have a lot of accessibility to it so that you can make it an easier game if you're losing interest in the difficulty part of it. But they do build a lot of good puzzles to the environments, and there's a lot of really good level design to it to make getting around these areas more fun and interesting than you might expect. So so that's a game I definitely recommend people check out for that. And then, for the last one here is it's the Lightfall expansion for Destiny 2 for PS4 and PS5. So if you have Destiny 2 installed, you can check that out. So I think that's the expansion from last year or the year before. I forget, I think it's the most recent one that they put out. They should have like another one coming out here in the summer. So that people go check that out. But yeah, you can check out this one. I've heard mixed things about. I think people are expecting a lot out of this one, especially stylistically. It has some really nice stuff going on. But yeah, I think the grappling hook mechanic that they try to add to it just doesn't really work super well, from what I've heard. So, but still, more Destiny 2 you can check out. So yeah, there you go. Some good games.
Yeah, evidently. Yeah, a lot of good stuff there.
I'm really liking that PlayStation lineup. Like, these are all games that, you know, I thought of buying at some point. So, all there. Tunic is a game that I've played a lot on Xbox Game Pass, but I think I'll be more motivated to play it on PlayStation with trophies. But yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, speaking of Game Pass, they've announced the next handful of days here for Game Pass, as we're already on the 5th, so the first like 2 weeks here, we're already kind of partway through that. The stuff that's available now, there's Have a Nice Death for console and PC. This is like a 2D action roguelike where you are Death, who's running this company around collecting souls, and all your like department managers have run amok and taken over their departments to try to be the ultimate boss, and you have to go in and just destroy them, take back your company, I guess. I played a little bit of this. I don't know that it's my kind of action game. It's not bad, but it's pretty solid for what it is. But yeah, that one's neat. Let's see. Also available now, Tomb Raider Definitive Edition for console and PC. This is the Definitive Edition where they kind of redid the visuals a little bit for the newer consoles as far as PS4 and Xbox One were concerned, as well as PC. So I've heard people talking about they changed the model for Laura to be closer to the actress they were using for the movie. Mm-hmm. I think so. It looks a little bit different. Maybe the lighting's changed and all that to make it look a little bit not great, but the game itself should still be pretty decent for that. But you get that weird character arc where she is very bummed out to kill a deer and then is just ruthlessly killing people by the end. But yeah, there you go for that. This is stuff coming out here in the near future on May 7th, so that'll be Tuesday. Kona 2 Broom. This is console and PC. This is a first-person narrative adventure game. But yeah, I believe more of a horror game to it. It says here, explore the rustic setting of a rural mining village of northern Canada in 1970 and uncover the mystery of the bizarre mist, the broom that has engulfed the region. So you go, there you go for that. Let's see. On May 9th, so that'll be Thursday, Little Kitty Big City. That'll be on console and PC. That is kind of an open world playground kind of thing. You're a little kitty cat that falls out of the window of your apartment that you're living in. So you go on this adventure to find your way back home, but also meet a bunch of other creatures and do little quests and such for them, help them out or whatever. So that's it's a game you can play. It looks pretty neat. So that'll be fun to see. That's also on, I think, at least Switch and PC as well. So that's one you can play a little bit elsewhere. Let's see. Also on here, Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons for console and PC. I don't think this is the new version. It just came out. I think this is the classic version from the Xbox 360 XBLA era. As they mentioned, it's the critically acclaimed and award-winning classic is returning to the Game Pass library. Yeah, the one from Swedish film director Joseph Ferris and developer Starbreeze Studios. So that's still a solid game to check out if you have not checked it out. But yeah, also, see, also available now. Yeah, we talked about this last week. Star Wars Jedi Survivor is on EA Play, so you have Game Pass Ultimate. You can check that out. And there's also a game called The Rewinder for console and PC that is also available now. 2D puzzle adventure game inspired by traditional Chinese folklore. I think it was announced as part of the ID at Xbox showcase, so we'll talk a little bit more about that stuff here in the near future. But yeah, there you go. Some nice stuff there as well.
Eh?
Yeah. So yeah, let's see what else we got here. Oh yeah, this game. Star Wars Hunters, a game people left for dead a long time ago because it got announced several years ago as being a Switch exclusive, also being a mobile game. And people were like, okay, when's this going to release? And it just kind of disappeared for a long time. And so it seems like it's finally coming out here on June 4th for Switch and iOS and Android. This is published by Zynga. So, in case you're wondering, it's a free-to-play third-person competitive arena combat game. So, yeah, you're on the planet of Vespera, where high-stakes competitions are awaiting you in the arena. I think you're playing... I'm not sure if you're playing as established Star Wars characters. I don't think it's mentioned anything here if you're making your own character. I assume you're making your own, but maybe not. I don't know. But, yeah. That seems neat. Maybe it'll be good. I don't know. We'll see. But there you go. That game's finally coming out. And then we got another addition to the Summer Game Fest lineup. That is the Xbox Games Showcase and Mystery Direct that they kind of poorly block out because it's pretty obvious that it's a Call of Duty Direct. That's going to follow it, especially the logo. In the bottom corner, that is very clearly an Activision logo. So I don't know why they're being secretive about it, as it's pretty obvious for anybody that's paid attention to any of the Call of Duty branding of late. I believe it's supposed to be a Black Ops game. So that's where they're going to be going with that. Might be Vietnam era. I forget where it might be set at this point. But yeah, the Xbox Game Showcase will air at on June 9th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Call of Duty Direct will be right after that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is going to be a pretty pivotal Xbox game showcase. You know, they had a pretty solid one last year. But at the same time, it's like, we're still waiting for, you know, the onslaught of games that are coming up after acquisition of all those studios. But yeah, and then, you know, moving on to the Mystery Direct. I'm not sure about this one. Like, I get it. You know, Call of Duty is obviously, like, one of the most important IPs in all of gaming. I just don't really see the point of having an event geared specifically for it, because people are going to buy it anyway. But, yeah, like, part of me is hoping that it's just smoke and mirrors to show something else, you know, maybe Fable. It won't happen, but, you know, a guy can dream.
Yeah. I think this is kind of a pivotal Call of Duty, because the last one did not do very well for them. Modern Warfare 3 has kind of been one that a lot of players do not like as much as they thought they would. Coming from the other Modern Warfare games they did, which I think is also partially because it got a pretty quick turnaround time. They threw a bunch of developers at it to get it out at a decent place. But yeah, there's been a lot of stuff going on with that. So yeah, this kind of gets the first Call of Duty under the Xbox stewardship, and see how this one is presented. Because yeah, Call of Duty games typically not a huge part of E3. Typically, they've been like part of the press conferences, but not so much on the direct show floor, especially of late. Activision tended to wait until later in the summer to start revealing even what the name is, even if that stuff gets leaked out pretty early. So yeah, that's that'll be that. So yeah, that'll be, I guess, Sunday. Yeah, that's Sunday. So we'll be able to have the Summer Game Fest main showcase and that on the podcast that week. Ubisoft is on the Monday. So yeah, we'll have to deal with all that. So start to take shape. For whatever reason, the Ubisoft showcase is not on the Summer Game Fest website. Whenever I check, it's just the main one and the Xbox showcase. So that's a little bit of a weird thing. But as this thing says, we're about 33 days away from Summer Game Fest starting. So that'll be one thing here. Yeah. That's all they got on there is the June 7th and June 9th events they got there. So, yeah, I assume we'll have a Sony showcase either during that week or shortly before that. And Nintendo, who knows? There's some rumblings about potential other games they have coming out later this year. I don't think anything substantial, but yeah, this is kind of it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But let's get to the bad news of the week. So we have four stories here of bad things happening. First up here is our PC negative story of the week. That we usually don't have, but either way. The Helldivers 2, that is has been a big deal on PC and PS5 here for the last few months. I believe that since launch it has had a requirement for linking your PSN account on the PC version that's kind of got not required initially when the server stuff was kind of in flux. As that stuff was on fire for the first couple of weeks. So naturally they're like, hey, let's not require this right now because we don't need to make the fire bigger on that. So, but now here, on May 3rd, they announced that Helldivers 2 players on PC will need to create a free PlayStation Network account to keep playing the game on Steam. And yeah, so I believe if you already have the game, you would not have to link it until June 4th. But as of May 6th, new players would have to have a PSN account to play.
And see, this is a big problem because there is huge, gigantic swaths of the world where this is not a viable option. And because of that, it has basically walled off an enormous part of the game's player base from being able to access it.
Yeah. I don't know if it making accounts in regions that they're not in would be workable on this. I don't know.
Maybe it's possible, but this is the place. This is Sony we're talking about. Yeah. And it also needs to be pointed out, Arrowhead Studios themselves were completely blindsided by this. So yeah, this is pretty much all Sony's fault.
Yeah.
And because it's very difficult to in any way sort of air this grievance to Sony in any way that would, you know, that would show any kind of like they actually hear and will do something about it. Arrowhead has basically had to take the brunt of all of the gamer rage that has come about. And that is reflected by their Eldivers 2's current rating on Steam.
Yeah, they have been review bombing it, as well as moving on to other games that Arrowhead has made mm-hmm. in the past, which I believe includes the first Helldivers, I forget the other games they made, Magicka, stuff like that, to review bomb that, because why not, I guess? Mm-hmm. If you're going to throw a fit about this, why not go all the way and show mm-hmm. how much of a weirdo to be about mm-hmm. this? In that sense, as well as starting to bomb other Sony games on there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole fun aspect of this. And of course, at a certain point, this kind of becomes its own monster of just internet drama that people join in
mm-hmm.
on. And people have been tweeting at the director of the game and all that to yell at him and all that. And he's responding to a lot of it from what I've seen mm-hmm. for some reason. At a certain point, I think he would maybe just take a break,
mm-hmm.
Especially on Twitter. But hey, that seems to be his prerogative. So
yeah,
that'll be interesting to see. I wouldn't be surprised if Sony kind of runs back to what they were doing, which was leaving it as an option, mm-hmm. maybe adding some extra benefits for people that do link it.
Maybe. I mean, it's not like they were like running this at a loss. Like Helldivers 2 is one of the most successful games of 2024. Like,
yeah.
And it's only been out for a couple months. So, yeah. You know, they were already making money hand over fist. Why they decided that they had to go ahead and do this now, other than for some maybe obscure legal reason, makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, that side of it is a really strange thing. I mean, I don't play Helldivers, and, you know, I don't really plan to in the future, but I do know that, like, the whole PSN account thing was something that they wanted to do a long time ago, but we also didn't, I'm pretty sure Sony didn't think that, or Sony didn't realize that because of this, there's a lot of people who are playing overseas via PC, that PlayStation Network isn't available in, that it would wall them off. So, you know, part of me thinks they're going to go ahead and like rewind that somehow, but like, it's really important that they keep this in their ecosystem, however it may be, because, you know, I think they started to do the same thing with MLB The Show as far as like trophies. I don't know, don't quote me on that, but like, it's something they want to do with all of their PlayStation games on PC. So there's that. But yeah, like the weird thing here is, like, as Brandon mentioned, like, this is the most popular game like right now, and like the reason that is because they didn't get anything wrong as far as like the live service stuff. They got it right away, and nobody does that. So seeing Sony pull the plug here is like obviously beyond stupid. There is no positive way to spin this. Like, this didn't need to happen in any sort of way. Like you know, I'm a PlayStation fanboy. Like I love my trophies, but you don't just take out a whole bunch of your player base. And like, think of it this way. Like, I read somewhere that this is like PlayStation's number 7 game to come out of like of their studios as far as sales go. And you have to keep in mind that this game came out day and date on PS5 and PC. If you take away the PC sales, it's not even in the top 20. That's how much like this matters as far as like people on PC here. So it's it's a really tough pill to swallow. And again, like, it can't be something that they thought would be like happening now, because, you know, there are a lot of people who are playing on PS5 and a lot of people who are playing on PC who have like a PlayStation account, and like they knew it wasn't going to affect them. But like, if you're thinking about whoever living in wherever and they can't access the game, yeah, you don't want to take them out, especially if they already paid for it. So.
Yeah. And see, the flip side to this is that because of this, Sony has basically been losing money by having to give all those people refunds.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how this goes.
Steam has already been like allowing all those refunds, right? So.
Yeah. So it's just, it's a fluster cuck is what it is.
Yeah. I assume we'll hear something tomorrow morning.
Probably.
On this. We'll see, but. Yeah, there you go. That's one of the big things that has happened this week.
Mm-hmm.
As far as other things that have happened, Square Enix had their financial reporting stuff going on, where they have announced that they have, let's see, they expect to record an extraordinary loss of 22.1 billion yen, which is about the equivalent of $144 million US.
Mm-hmm.
In content abandonment losses following a revised development approach. So they, announced a little while ago, they plan to be more selective and focused in their allocation of development resources, which seem to be like, we're not going to just make everything that anybody pitches to us internally, which has led to there being sometimes absurd amounts of games releasing throughout the year, especially the last couple of years. So they have sort of revised their group. The way this is worded is weird. Revised the group's approach to development of high definition games with the intention of being more selective and focused in the allocation of development resources. So it very much seems like they have canceled a number of projects that equal this amount of $144 million worth.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't specify what games, so a lot of Square Enix fans have just been going out of their minds, just trying to figure out what games are going to survive this. And it's like probably anything Final Fantasy. There's been rumored remakes of like 9 and Tactics and some of that kind of stuff, as well as Dragon Quest 12 and the Dragon Quest 3 2D HD game that's out there that people are worried is going to be canceled. And like, I don't know if these are just all games that have not been announced yet or what, but yeah, this is kind of one of those stories that just gets people kind of buzzing about whether certain games are still existing or not and all that. And yeah, one of those business things that doesn't really play as far as giving people any actual details.
Yeah, I mean, like, Square Enix is a company that, like, hasn't been shy as far as, like, Deal Field Chronicle or, like, you know, Triangle Strategy and, like, all these, like, I don't know. I don't want to call them, like, you know, random games. You know, a lot of them are definitely really good. I know Triangle Strategy is a game that's definitely good. But, yeah, I don't think people should be really worried about, like, the Final Fantasies and the Dragon Quests and whatnot, because obviously those are tentpole franchises that Square Enix hangs their hat on. The thing is, though, like, whenever, like, we're talking about Square Enix and sales, it's always, like, them being disappointed. And it doesn't matter, like, what property it is, whether it was, like, you know, what they had with Eidos and what they had with, you know, the companies they used to own. But, like, you know, people are talking about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth not selling well either. I mean, like, yeah, how about you guys consider, like, what happened here? Final Fantasy VII Remake came out during the height of the pandemic on the PS4. Way more have a PS4 than have a PS5. The Rebirth is it's the sequel to that game, so you know people are only going to buy it if they beat the one previous, and it's a PS5 exclusive. And even though, like, you know, there you can freely get them like at the store now, it doesn't mean like, you know, you don't have the same audience. Like, the audience is definitely dwindled. And you know, consider the fact that Final Fantasy 16 came out just a few months before that, also exclusively on the PS5. It's like, yeah, your sales don't make any sense, Square. So, you know, figure out those projections and lower them, because, you know, I'm like, we would love to say that, and I would love to say that these games are definitely worth the money. But if people don't have a PS5, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was looking at like recent releases, and it's like there's that Star Ocean: A Second Story R, that Dragon Quest game based on the anime that I don't know that many people bought, mm-hmm. like Dragon Quest Treasures and the Live Alive stuff. Like that stuff's probably not too mm-hmm. much of a big deal finance-wise, because it's just a remake or remaster. They didn't really mm-hmm. go too ambitious on that. But then you have, you know, Forspoken. You have Romancing Saga, Tactics Ogre Reborn, Valkyria mm-hmm. Elysium, Harvestella, Star Ocean: The Divine Force. You get Valkyria Elysium, The Dialfield Chronicle, which could not have done super well. Various Daylife, which was a mobile game initially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a big FMV game, The Centennial Case, Shijima Story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stranger of Paradise. Babylon's Fall, that's a game that got shut down within a year.
Mm-hmm.
A live service game. So anybody bought that on physical disc has a coaster now?
Yep.
So yeah, there's a lot of stuff over the years, last few years, that has been like, I don't know, these were great bets to make on some of this stuff. Especially when you had, yeah, here, they had Voice of Cards, The Beast of Burden, September 13th. Various Daylife, September 13th. Dialfield Chronicle, September 22nd. Valkyrie Profile Lenith and Valkyrie Elysium, September mm-hmm. 29th. Nier Automata on the Switch, October 6th. Triangle Strategy on PC, October 13th. Star Ocean: The Divine Force, October 27th. Mm-hmm. Harvestella, November 4th. Let's see, Tactics Ogre Reborn, November 11th. Romancing Saga, December 1st. Mm-hmm. Dragon Quest Treasures, December 9th. And Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, December 13th. And it's like, that's like 8-9 games I numbered mm-hmm. off here in like 3.5 months.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely can't blame them for a lack of content. You know, for me, it's less so the whole like bets to make as far as like the success of these games. But, you know, I'm happy they're available and I'm happy they're there to play. But again, like the projections just got to make sense. You got to ship what makes sense. And, so far, they really haven't. And, you know, I get that, you know, release date isn't always something you can control. But at the same time, it's like, people can only have so much money. I mean, like, this isn't Square, but, like, you know, I want to use Sega for an example. You know, they have Persona 3 Reload and Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. These are two of my favorite games of the year, but they came out within 2 weeks within each other. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a week after that was Unicorn Overlord. These are three fantastic games, but I'm pretty sure that the majority of people who have all these games haven't beaten them all. So, yeah, it's just rough.
Yeah. So yeah, they've definitely stacked their calendars in such a way that's like, I don't know how you expect even the most ardent fans of your games to buy mm-hmm. most of these, if not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, give people a little bit of a break here, especially like. Release some of those games in the early parts of the year that are a little bit slower.
Yeah.
But I guess they probably wanted those in that quarter.
Yeah.
Boost their numbers. But yeah, there's your Square Enix news.
Yeah.
Let's get to some layoffs. I do not know how to spell or pronounce this developer's name. Kaoken?
Yeah, Kaoken.
Kaoken Interactive has laid off their entire staff.
Mm-hmm.
As the developers of the Deliver Us the Moon and Deliver Us Mars
yep.
series that are very good, like, I don't know, puzzle action adventure mm-hmm. games set around, you know, space stuff
yep.
that are very good games for what they are. Very mm-hmm. kind of unique, smaller budget games that look really nice. But yeah, they have had issues getting lack of funding for their any future projects. As they say here, heartbroken, we've had to lay off our entire team at Kaoken because of nothing substantial materializing directly after our visit to GDC 2024 in March. We've unfortunately exhausted all of our possible options for publishing, work for hire, and co-development.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, their top priority at the moment is helping its laid off staff find work elsewhere. It's also preparing a Kickstarter campaign for the new title, Deliver Us Home, a solitary astronaut experience about finding home, which it first pitched in an open video to publishers in March, so maybe finding a means for them to potentially work on that through Kickstarter, but I don't know who all is going to work on that. But maybe that'll do well for them. But yeah, it seems like they only have two people at the moment. Cohen Dietman, the CEO, and Paul Dietman, managing director. So that must be very tough time to lay off this studio, essentially. So yeah, great. Great time.
Yeah.
Losing a talented smaller developer there.
Yeah, that's the worst part. That's the worst part about the modern gaming industry is all of these like really great and honestly really talented smaller, you know, indie devs, because they're so it just sucks the way that the industry works now, that it's harder for these it's in some ways both easier and harder for these types of niche publishers developers to, you know, be able to stay afloat.
Yeah. Especially as publishers are leaning away from maybe these like mid to upper tier games from studios they don't own in a way that's, you know, especially stuff that maybe doesn't do huge numbers for this. And yeah, that's sad to see, because there's a lot of great games that fall in that category here. And yeah, that's related to our next story here, that Take-Two has been reported to have shut down Roll7 and Intercept Games. Roll7, both of these were published under the, published their games under the Private Division label. Roll7, the makers of the Ollie Ollie games, as well as Roller Drome and a handful of other games they've made over the years. And yeah, the Intercept Games was the studio that was formed to make Kerbal Space Program 2, which I believe that studio was formed by poaching the developer that worked on the first game, Squad. So that's the whole thing. That's a cursed franchise, I would say. Nobody that works on Kerbal Space Program seems to survive
last very long. Yeah.
And that's still in early access on PC, and that's not a great sign. They're supposedly going to keep developing it, but I don't know who that is that works on that.
Yeah.
Maybe some other developers that are maybe cheaper, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, Roll7, I believe, is about 55 people. Intercept, I believe, is about 70 from what it says here. And these seem to be part of the layoffs that they announced back in April. So they're still kind of going through and laying off people. Okay, they're going to be layoffs around 600 employees by about December, the end of December this year. So it seems like we'll still get more announcements. And I believe it also, part of this is that there's been a bunch of people laid off at Private Division, their publishing label, as well. So that's a shame as well. So yeah, these are, Roll7 was acquired back in November 2021, so they did not even make 2.5 years with Private Division before they were shut down, as I believe they were acquired, or yeah, they sold themselves to Private Division and Take-Two as a means of finding a more stable ground to land on, with the pandemic doing that whole thing, and they were already publishing Roll7, or yeah, in Ollie Ollie World and Roller Drome. So it seemed like a decent fit for them to get some security for the foreseeable future, but that seems to have only lasted, you know, 2.5 years. And that's sad, because they are a fantastic developer. The Ollie Ollie games are all really good games, and Roller Drome also is a ridiculous game, but it's also a very good game. On that is a very good kind of spin on your action shooter games, but with a lot of like matrixy slow-mo effects and all that. So that's sad to see a storied indie developer that is pretty well acclaimed with most of their games. So That's sad to see. And yeah, Intercept Games, they were starting work on Rebel Space Program 2, getting it out in early access in the last year or so. And we're still working on that. But as a result of Washington State's employment laws, they Take-Two has filed a notice with them to announce these layoffs. So they'll have to work through that. But yeah, those people will be losing their jobs. And yeah, just more terrible news.
Yeah. I don't know how often Take-Two has been in the news for this exact reason. It would be nice if they just, I mean, I'm not saying it would be nice, but like, just do it all at once. Like, I'm tired of having to talk about the same companies. They can't figure things out.
Yeah, I think part of that's probably legal requirements. If they're laying off people in different states and countries. Because, I think Roll 7 is in the UK. I think they are. I could be wrong. Yeah, London, England. So there's probably laws they have to go through there to potentially find them jobs elsewhere in the company, and then from there give them proper severance and all that. But yeah, I was looking at their website, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a studio that as of like 2018 prioritizes not crunching at all, telling people to go home when it's, you know, time to close up the studio. Though I think they're also a fully remote studio, so they try to keep everybody from working too long on these games, and do a lot of charity work for various charities when they can, that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's sad to see a lot of those kind of developers that try to take take the publisher offers to find some security and just have it the rug pulled out from under them. It's that kind of stuff that's like, man, fuck Take-Two.
Seriously, just ugh.
Yeah. So yeah, there's your batch of bad news for the week. We'll get to some better news here. The ID at Xbox Showcase that was presented by IGN. So, which means that there's no link to a video in here. You have to go find that on, I think you probably have to just search on Google or YouTube for it. It's not hosted on the Xbox YouTube channel. It's on the or the ID at Xbox channel. It's not on any of that. It's on the IGN. I got to go to like the IGN Games channel. Like that's somehow different from the main IGN channel. But whatever. It was like an hour of dead air early on as they're doing the countdown stuff and showing IGN content. They have a lot of interstitials with, I assume, their IGN hosts doing little bits that I didn't really find to be all that interesting or funny. And so, yeah, there's like a weird little bit where they just show off announcements from the Triple I Initiative showcase from a few weeks back that just seemed to be like, hey, there was Xbox stuff there too. And it's like, okay. But yeah, you've got a handful of games here that got announced that has some interesting stuff. Like there's Astor Blade of the Monolith. It's coming out May 30th. That is like a third-person action RPG that's coming to everything. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So that looks pretty solid from what they showed of it. So that's one to check out here. Let's see. Yeah, there's 33 Immortals as a closed beta coming out here on May 24th. You go on their website to sign up for that. There's a PAL World New Pals update. I had some new pals in like a new area that's coming out this summer. There's Commando Origins that's coming out. Let's see, PS5, Xbox, PC, and that'll be on Game Pass as well. It's getting closed beta this summer. There's a game called Centum. That seemed kind of neat. So that is a what is that? An unreliable narrative-driven adventure game that'll just be on Xbox and PC out this summer at some point. So there's that. And here's one of the bigger surprises: Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. This is the new Don't Nod game.
And it is Don't Nod as hell.
Yeah, is a narrative adventure game Set in the fictional town of Velvet Cove in the summer of 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Four high school friends spend the summer together, hanging out, playing music, becoming best friends until something changes the trajectory of all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
After 27 years of silence between them, they reunite to confront the dark secrets that made them promise to never speak again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some weird supernatural stuff that seems to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of look into footage and all this and try and figure out like what happened that caused this rift between mm-hmm. them.
Yeah. It is. It's what I want out of a Don't Nod game, basically.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least visually, it sticks, you know. it's everything from, you know, the clothing and the hairstyles, the local video rental place, the XB troll doll, you know, the on the merry-go-round, the it screams mid-90s, at least, you know, small town mid-90s.
Yeah. So, yeah, that looks neat. That'll be out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
PS5, Xbox, and PC. So we'll be able to check that one out.
Mm.
This one's also neat looking. Keylocker, turn-based cyberpunk action. It's mm-hmm. coming to everything. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. This summer, inspired by games like Mario and RPG and Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Blends the charm of physical comedy with the depth of storytelling and challenge of strategic mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Genre-bending fusion of JRPG narrative and rhythm elements. So that looks like a pretty neat game. Mm-hmm. Has a nice style to it and all that. So we'll be looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be this summer.
Mm.
So that'll be fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got Stampede Racing Royale, which is like a kart racing battle royale game.
Yep.
That'll be out on Xbox and PC in early access this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out. There's Jackbox announced
mm-hmm.
the Jackbox Naughty Pack.
Mm-hmm.
Their first like pack of games that are adult themed, at least.
Yeah.
Not so much it'll be like sexy or anything, but allow you to have more adult themes and cursing and all that kind of stuff to it. They have mm-hmm. not announced the, I think it's three games in there
mm-hmm.
that'll be there. They have not announced any details on that, but teased it during this showcase.
Yep.
And so I assume they'll spill those details over the next handful mm-hmm. of months before they announce a date. So that'll be pretty neat to see. Then we got, Times and Galaxy. This is an indie game I've been looking at for a while. It's an adventure game about space journalism.
Mm-hmm.
As it says here, embark on an interplanetary adventure as the first robo-reporter for the Times and Galaxy, solar system's mm-hmm. most trusted holopaper. Mm-hmm. You're just an intern, but if you can get the scoop, write great stories, and impress your colleagues, maybe you'll get to keep your job. And so, you get assigned stories to look into and decide how all that gets mm-hmm. reported on. So that looks pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out in June. No specific date on that, but that's on everything. PS5, mm-hmm. Xbox, Switch, and PC. So we'll check that one out. Then we got like a game that was teased here, Sulfur.
Mm-hmm.
Not really too much in the way of details on that. Mm-hmm. That's going to be Xbox and PC.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's combines first-person shooter mechanics with role-playing elements.
Mm-hmm.
Make important choices to survive battles and explore a world of intense and brutal combat.
Mm-hmm.
Has a really nice style to it, so that looks neat. There's that, and then Pharah: The Sundered Tribes. This is PS5, Xbox, PC, and it'll be out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a Monster Hunter action RPG.
It definitely looks like it.
That'll be out in early access at some point later mm-hmm. this year. So that's cool.
Mm.
Yeah, it's got a lot of cool like aerial action that you can do.
Yeah.
You have mystical tether hook and agile glider wings.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a lot of options for getting around that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that looks neat. Let's see. Yeah, All You Need Is Help. This is the new game from Q Games,
mm-hmm.
the makers of the Pixel Junk games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cooperative puzzle game that is on everything.
Mm-hmm.
PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. It'll be out this fall. It'll also be on Game Pass.
Mm.
That'll be a neat looking game. So yeah, it looks like everybody plays this almost kind of Tetris shapes.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to fill out these different like marked squares, trying to figure out the orientation that they all need to be in to fill those out.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff, or plop themselves on buttons to open up paths mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So you got to work together mm-hmm. if you're going to play it in co-op. But you can also play locally, or solo play, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that looks like it's going to be neat. It has a nice style to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go for that. Yeah, also shown off here, Tales of Iron 2, Whiskers mm-hmm. of Winter. This is, yeah, I played the first game here a decent bit. It is sort of a 2D Souls-like game.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're playing as, at least the first one, you're playing as a mouse
mm-hmm.
that was doing a lot of killing of mm-hmm. creatures and other enemies, that kind of stuff, and, you know, getting your upgrades and all that
mm-hmm.
as you go. So, yeah, they're doing a sequel to that. With some more stuff going on, so that looks pretty neat.
Mm.
It has the voice actor Doug Cockle, which I think he's
mm-hmm.
What's his face from The Witcher 3.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a fairly well known voice actor there. So yeah, mm-hmm. that looks neat. That'll be out later this year, potentially. So we'll see how that goes. That's on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. There's Hangry that's coming to Xbox and PC.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they call a snack and slash RPG.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, your hungry hero, Hangry, works for Gutra, the mm-hmm. owner and chef of a dingy underworld diner in a city where food is king. Gutra's greed is as insatiable as Hangry's appetite. Mm-hmm. Hangry must travel across the galaxy, hunting down delicious monsters and collecting the finest products for the sake of the diner and his stomach. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I saw the preview for this, and yeah, it looks cheesy as hell, but it looks like it could be fun.
Yeah. So there's that, and then they announced this Kaizen Gameworks mm-hmm. project called Promise Mascot Agency
mm-hmm.
that is on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC for next year.
Yeah.
This also has Ikumi Nakamura mm-hmm. and Mai Matori working on it as well. Ikumi Nakamura, you might know as the lady that was on the E3 stage showing off mm-hmm. What was it, Tokyo Ghost
mm-hmm.
Story, whatever that was called. She's formed her own studio, though that's not the one that's working on this.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the developers of Paradise Killer.
Yep. Which was a game I really enjoyed. Really loved that game. I loved it had one of the just most neatest and most unique aesthetics of all, this sort of weird combination of like Lovecraftian stuff with like this sort of vaporwave aesthetic.
Yeah.
And it had like great character design. I loved it.
Yeah. And they describe this as the world's first and best open world mascot management crime drama.
Mm.
Whatever that means. But I think like Paradise Killer, it's got a kind of a murder mystery to it.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, your crime, drama, intrigue, what has happened to Michi? Michi, a disgraced Yakuza lieutenant, is exiled to a cursed town to turn a bankrupt mascot agency into a profitable enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's got a lot of crime and other stuff going on that they got to get to the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out why this town is so cursed.
Mm.
So yeah, that's a weird one.
Mm.
Then we got the news here that Gamera Games is putting their games on Game Pass,
mm-hmm.
Which includes The Rewinder, which we mentioned earlier.
Mm.
Firework is coming to PC Game Pass only. It's a horror puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
There's depersonalization. That's also just PC Game Pass. It's a branching RPG with multiple endings. So is that there's Kiplerth. That is also just on PC Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2D sandbox RPG. And then there's Volcano Princess, which is on console Game Pass. That's a fantasy parenting simulator.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the handful of games they announced. Some interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say they are, I'm not going to guess which country. I think they're a Southeast Asian country. Or mm-hmm. From one of the Southeast Asian countries. Shanghai, China. Okay, yeah.
Mm.
I was going to say it might be a Chinese developer.
Mm.
But yeah, there's that's. Then we got to see more of Dungeons of Hinterberg, mm-hmm. which finally has a date, July 18th, mm. For Xbox and PC and Game Pass. So
mm.
it'll check out that kind of action RPG, social simulation kind of hybrid game
mm-hmm.
With a lot of puzzle solving and enemies to take out and all that. So
mm-hmm.
that looks neat. And yeah, then they ended up on Vampire Survivors
mm-hmm.
announcing their new laboratory updates.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may have called it laboratory updates, maybe mm-hmm. 2 R's in that in the middle. So that's mm-hmm. weird, but it adds like running animations to characters. That's weird. Because mm-hmm. I think there's stages where you're going to be running. Mm-hmm. 7 new achievements, 1 new challenge stage, 1 new bonus stage, 1 new character, 1 new weapon, 1 new passive weapon, and 1 new power-up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, since the early days of Vampire Survivors, people have been asking important questions like, why is it called Santa Water? This patch is finally here to answer that. What other dark mysteries will surface while looking for answers in the laboratory? And it's like, I guess people have been wondering that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people take it as holy water that they just call Santa water.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure this is going to add some story
mm-hmm.
that will answer that stuff. They mentioned like there's now train tracks that
mm-hmm.
can be used for actual train stuff, which really screws over a specific Vampire Survivors clone that's mm-hmm. Essentially trained to Bhutan.
Mm-hmm.
Styled, so yeah, there you go. That's pretty much everything on this showcase.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so neat stuff. Yeah, Brandon, anything here you're interested in?
Well, let's see. Well, obviously, Lost Records is pretty much foremost the one that's on my mind because I liked Life in Strange, and this looks to be sort of in the same vein, if not thematically so. And plus I just love the aesthetic and the atmosphere of those games, that sort of somewhat small town view, but it's idealistic but not really. Also let's see, probably Dungeons of Hinterberg. It looks fun. Hangry also looks kind of fun, if a little cheesy. All You Need Is Help looks pretty nice. And yeah, that's about it, at least right now. Some of these games, I need to see more of them.
How about you, Dan Reb?
Yeah, I mean, first off, this is not something that I watched. I had a hard time finding the stream, so yeah, there's that. but yeah, the main things that caught my eye were actually pretty casual. I'm looking forward to that Jackbox pack. You know, whenever I hang out with friends and we have nothing else to do, Jackbox and then Godsend, and mm-hmm. The fact that they're doing a dirty version is totally up my alley. So I am definitely going to be looking forward to that one. The project from Don't Nod also has my attention. You know, also, unfortunately, like they don't have the best name right now, but I still love their game. So I'm looking forward to trying that out. Hangry is interesting. I played that a little bit at GDC. It definitely has some deep gameplay, and I'm looking forward to giving that a try when that comes. I do have to take a closer look in order to see what I'm really interested in. But those three were definitely up my alley.
All right.
Mm.
So yeah, that's kind of it for the show this week. Mm. We got some bad news for you, some good news, and some things you might want to check out here. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how this next month or so shakes out as we get more of an idea of what sort of showcases will be on during Summer Game Fest or around it. And yeah, I think we will be live streaming a bunch of those as much as we can. So I am getting my work schedule all lined up for that. So that'll be fun to get some time off there to do that stuff. So
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that too. I actually got an invite to Summer Game Fest Play Days. So I'll definitely be making the trip to LA to get some hands-on types of stuff.
All right. So yeah, that'll be fun. Let's see. I'm trying to see what other stuff is coming out here. Let's see. Prison Architect 2, I believe, is out on consoles. PS5, Xbox, Series X, and S, and PC. The Rising hits 1.0 on PC on the 8th. Animal Well is out this week. So that is on PS Plus Extra at launch on the 9th. So that'll be on, that's Thursday. And also on the 9th is Crow County, that PS1 styled survival horror game. So yeah, that'll be fun to see. I'll definitely check out that Animal Well. So yeah. Yeah, I think we'll end the show here. Thank you all for tuning in. And thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. Hopefully some brighter news. And yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.